Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello and a very happy Friday. Hope you're okay. Thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast on March the 14th. Coming up, police urge male victims of domestic abuse to come forward as a Canterbury wife is found guilty of murder. We find out how tourism is faring in Kent after the pandemic, and a new version of Monopoly launches today. Find out which Kent towns feature. But first up, we're taking a look at our top story. The ambulance service has apologised after a Canterbury man with a fractured eye socket had to get a taxi to hospital. Well, Kate has more details for the podcast. Kate, can you tell us more about what happened? And what was he told by dispatchers? And just how badly was Lee injured, Kate? Kate, thank you ever so much.
Kent Online News.
A Canterbury woman who killed her husband, then hid his body in their garden, has been convicted of murder. At court, her Jeremy Rickards had suffered injuries from weeks of domestic abuse before he was killed last summer. Maureen Rickards, who's 50 and from St Martin's Road, tried to claim he'd travelled to Saudi Arabia. His body was found under grass cuttings 6 days after he'd been reported missing. This is the moment Maureen was arrested.
Maureen, hello.
Hello.
Hello. So the time is 12:23. Okay, so I'm placing you under arrest under suspicion of fraud.
Fraud of what?
False representation, okay? So
false representation of
so
what?
So the circumstances are you're using your husband's card without permission to make purchases, okay? So you don't have to say anything, but it may harm your defence if you're not mentioned when questioned, something which you later rely on in court. Anything you do say may be given in evidence.
I'm just going to
Well, DI Colin McKean is from Kent Police and he spoke outside court following yesterday's guilty verdict.
The pain and suffering subjected to Jeremy Rickards in his final days is quite horrifying, cruel, and I hope that they can find some solace in this outcome today. What this does raise, once again, unfortunately, is the danger of domestic violence in our community and how severe it can become. And I just want to urge anyone suffering from domestic violence to come forward to Kent Police, to our local partners, charitable organisations for support. This is especially the case, as shown here, with male victims of domestic violence who we know underreport. I wish to give them if there's any good points that can come from this extremely sad, indeed, case, it would be that people come forward and report and seek the assistance that they need to get through really difficult times. What I would say is from Kent Police, we will listen, we will investigate cases, and we will prosecute offenders where we can. So please do come forward and seek the help that you deserve.
Rickards will be sentenced next month. An investigation into the death of a prisoner at HMP Rochester has found roll checks were not carried out the morning he took his own life. 45-year-old Sean Higgins was serving a 12-year sentence for trying to stab a police officer. He was diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia and monitored under self-harm prevention orders. He was found dead in his cell last February. It's now been ruled he was not given the required standard of care. A coroner has said action should be taken to prevent future deaths. A Thanet man who defecated in a police van after being arrested has been jailed for 100 days. Josh Saunders was detained after being found rifling through people's cars in Ramsgate. He also had cocaine and cannabis on him. The 24-year-old, who doesn't have a permanent address, admitted several offences, including smearing human waste over the cell of the van. An investigation into the crash of a light aircraft as it came into land at Rochester Airport has found the pilot overshot the landing. Fire crews, paramedics and police were at the scene near Walderslade last August when the aircraft came down in Woodland during windy weather. The 79-year-old pilot was the only person on board and wasn't injured.
Kent Online reports.
A 3-foot-long unexploded bomb has been found in a garden in Dartford. Police and disposal experts were at the scene in Kirby Road for most of yesterday after it was dug up by a landscaper. Nearby homes had to be evacuated, and you can see pictures pictures of the bomb at Kent Online. Whilst you're on the website, you can also see a picture of a hand grenade that's been found on a Kent beach. The Coast Guard and Bomb Squad were called to Dungeness on Wednesday. It turned out to be a German grenade, which was safely disposed of on the beach itself. Now, a survey has found morale has improved among staff at the ambulance service that covers Kent. There's been a 6% yearly rise in the number who would recommend CCAM as a place to work. Nearly 6 in 10 members of staff say they feel safe to speak up about any concerns. Last week, it was revealed the service is coming out of special measures. Now, two children's centres in Kent that were facing closure have been saved thanks to a last-minute U-turn from the council. Seashells in Sheerness and Millmead in Margate were both under threat as KCC looked to save money in order to balance their budget. However, there was a huge community campaign to save both sites, and now it's been revealed they'll be financed for the next 12 months to deliver family hub services from their centres. Councillor Sue Chandler has been speaking to Gabriel Morris and Simon Finlay from the local Democracy Reporting Service.
So what I've agreed today is that the decision will have the addition of a clause which allows the option of direct funding to Seashells and Millmead from the fourth year Family Hub grant to deliver Family Hub services from their centres.
But this is only for one more year. What happens after that year?
So it gives a year for both the centres to establish and then for consideration of the future. The Family Hub network is going to be with us. It's sustainable. It's the policy going forwards. So how that Family Hub is delivered is an iterative thing, and will continue to be so because it responds to the needs of communities. So that will always be the case, and we can take it forward in that way.
Can we safely assume that the amount you were trying to save is the amount that they're going to get?
The specifics of finance will be dependent on the services that the Family Hub services that those centres actually want to deliver.
Okay, so if I was someone going to the Family Hub, say in March this year, and I'm going to go in March next year, mm-hmm. would I notice any difference in the services there?
I would hope not. No, I would hope the centres will be able to keep going, but they will be able to have the funding to deliver those Family Hub services, which they have been delivering for the past year. What we all want is the best for our children and families, and I absolutely understand that. That's why I've listened to what everybody has had to say about co-location, about the best place to deliver those services from. I have to look at it from a very different perspective to those people, those families in Millmead and in Seashells. Sadly, I do. But I'm glad that we've got to the point where it's been possible to actually fund in this way going forwards.
Ian and Kate Townsend-Blazier from Seashells in Sheerness. They've also been speaking to Gabriel.
Seashells is on the Isle of Sheppey, in the heart of Sheerness. We're a family hub, a community hub that offers services for children, young people, families, and actually of all ages, ranging from things like stay and play groups, family support work, courses, parenting programmes, Kent Community Pantry, so, and Family Food Bank as well. Lots of other things.
And your reaction to today?
Yeah, I think overall it's a positive outcome for us. Obviously we still need to know the finer details, and obviously it seems to be that it could possibly end on the 31st of March 2026. So we need to explore what those opportunities might be going forward. But initially, you know, well, I remember first speaking to people and we had very little hope at the start of this journey to overcome this decision. And today that we have done that to some degree, we just need to know what the finer details look like.
Is it going to be smiling faces when you go across the bridge back to the island?
Yes, most definitely. The response, as Ian has said, we do need some finer details for complete clarification, but there is more hope, and that equals smiley faces.
Kent Online reports.
Now, as part of English Tourism Week, which kicks off today, the Kent Online podcast has been hearing how the tourism sector here in Kent is almost back to pre-pandemic levels. It's an industry that creates nearly 80,000 jobs and generates £4 billion for the local economy. Jim Dawson is from Visit Kent, and he's been chatting to Lucy.
We are blessed one might say, because we have got, yes, we've got that wonderful coastline. We've got some fantastic towns and cities, which are diverse. You know, we've got some that have got really rich history and heritage, but then there are others that are newer and have got, you know, a little bit more of a gritty urban edge to them. We've also just got some fantastic countryside as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what are the main sort of marketing angles for people who maybe have never visited Kent? How do you kind of get the word out to them that it's a great place to come and visit?
The standard line that people often like to use with things like that is to say, oh, there's something for everybody. But that's something of a cliche. So we try and avoid that as much as we can. But that said, whatever people's passions or whatever their interests are, then they will be able to find something in Kent that will completely not only satisfy their requirements, but hopefully exceed their expectations. So in terms of the way that we market the destination and the things that we like to say to people is, you know, come and prepare to be surprised. Because whatever it is you're passionate about, you will be able to find it here in Kent, and you'll probably discover a little bit of something else as well. And that might be discovering something about the county and about the destination, or it might be discovering something about yourself. But it's certainly all here for you.
Are there any kind of exciting new industries or any sort of new attractions in Kent? I know we've got sort of traditional places that people like to visit, like maybe Canterbury, and, you know, obviously we've got the coastal areas, but what kind of new things have maybe come to the county recently that people want to come and see?
Well, so an area that's seen a big explosion over the last few years would be in viticulture and the development of our vineyards. I think it's certainly true that Kent is leading the way in the production of English wine. We've got some fantastic providers here who are really, you know, they're really pushing the boundaries in terms of quality for sparkling wine. And they're offering some great visitor experiences as well. You know, you can come and you can have tours and tastings and picnics in vineyards, and that's fantastic. But there's also some great street food type environments. You know, particularly I'm thinking of places like the Harbour Arm in Folkestone. You know, you can get that wonderful coastal experience, but there's some really novel street food that you can get. And then there are developments all the time in terms of what attractions are offering. Thinking about places like Wonderworks over in Thanet, you know, they've massively changed and revamped their exhibition over the last few years. We've got Canterbury Tales reopening very, very soon. So that's an attraction that's been closed for quite a while now, but that's going to be reopening. We're really looking forward to that one. And then lots and lots of other businesses just have a fantastic program of events. You know, we're not going to be discovering any new castles anytime soon, and there's no plans for any new wildlife parks opening up, but they do have a program of events running all throughout the year. So they're always looking to find new things and new experiences that they can share with visitors.
Some interesting stuff there. And whilst we're talking about some of Kent's big attractions, dog owners have made complaints to the National Trust after their pets were banned from a cafe in Dover. The policy at the White Cliffs of Dover Visitor Centre was introduced because customers reported having food stolen and being disrupted by barking. Well, Trust bosses say it's left some patrons feeling uncomfortable, but dog owners say the ban turns people away. We've been asking those at the attraction what they think.
I think it deters people away. Especially in people still like to walk the dogs in windy and wet weather. And I'd like to look round the shop, but I'll be deterred to do that because they don't like dogs.
If your dog is actually misbehaving and being a nuisance to everybody and stealing food and jumping on tables, well, you shouldn't allow your dog to do that in any place, let alone inside a restaurant. because obviously you're going to get the dogs banned.
It's a little bit frustrating. I understand because they can cause mayhem. I know ours does. But it's a bit frustrating when one of us has to stay indoors. One of us has to go and one of us has to stay outside.
I mean, would I like it that they would allow him in? Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, as long as there's still space at least allocated outside, then, you know, we can make do.
You can join the debate on this one by commenting on Kent Online or via our socials.
Kent Online News.
A Whitstable and Herne Bay version of Monopoly has launched today. The game features local landmarks, including Whitstable Harbour and Herne Bay Pier, as well as Tankerton Slopes and the Oyster Bay Trail. Lucy's been speaking to John Keane Tomlinson, who's from Winning Moves UK.
It's essentially been one that's been in the works for a little while. Managed to get in the way of some quite big competition to get its own edition this year. But we always look for pockets of the UK that have loads of local pride, obviously natural beauty as well, and that kind of real community connection. So we definitely saw that in Whitstable and Herne Bay.
What kind of work goes into starting to sort of make the board itself and the game? You know, once Whitstable and Herne Bay was chosen as one of the places to get its new board, what are the next steps and how does that process work?
Yes, so we did our announcement last year, and during that process, we opened up our suggestions mailbox. The local public were able to have their votes, basically mention a number of things that they'd like to see within the game. From there, obviously, we go to design. Obviously, this morning you'll be able to have a look at the game, but there's a lot of work there that went into really trying to represent the area correctly, get some of those kind of beach coastal themes in there as well. So, yeah, we hope that when people get their hands on it, they're happy with the product.
Can you tell people a bit about what kind of things are included on the board?
I won't go into too much detail, as obviously people will be able to go and pick that up this morning, but we've tried our best to get all of kind of the big coastline features in, a lot of the natural stuff, walking routes, and some of those kind of family favourites and some of the favourites from the public that people would visit quite often as well. So, yeah, I'll keep it quite vague for now, but there's some quite interesting bits that I think the local public will be really happy to see in there.
What kind of reaction do you get when you take these Monopoly boards out into the towns and places that they're based on from residents who know the area and have maybe lived there all their life?
Yes, yeah, so it's something we're very careful with, of course. We know that with the public having been there for X amount of years, or some people being born and bred, we really want to do the game justice. So typically we have massive positive reception. Obviously, it's something that's really positive for the local area, celebrates the local area, and we often see them getting posted off as far as kind of the States. We've had some posted in New Zealand in the past as well. So we know that there's kind of the expat population abroad who pick up the games as well. So yeah, a hugely positive thing which reflects the area, celebrates the local area, and I think people really appreciate that.
It's been released as part of celebrations to mark 90 years of the game. A Pride event's going to happen again in Ashford this summer. There'll be a market in Park Mall on June the 21st with entertainment at the bandstand. A protest march through the town centre will happen in the afternoon. And March's full moon, also known as the Worm Moon, will be visible in Kent skies tonight. It'll appear from around 6:30 this evening if the clouds stay away. It's called a worm moon because it comes out at the same time of year when earthworms resurface after winter.
Kent Online Sports.
Football, and it's a trip to Accrington Stanley for Gillingham in League Two this weekend. Both sides have had a similar run of form this season, with the Gills 19th and the home side just two places below them. Lone striker Jimmy J. Morgan has been speaking to our sports reporter Luke Cordell.
You know, I spoke to the gaffer and stuff, and he was just emphasising the importance of using my body and winning fouls, because he said that they'll probably be quite clumsy but very aggressive. So I think if my first touch is good and I can use my body well, then I win a lot of fouls.
Is that probably one of the biggest learning curves going against sort of strong people?
Yeah, like I said, that was the main reason I wanted to come to League Two, to learn the physical aspect of league football and men's football. You know, it's something that I couldn't learn playing under 21s. And yeah, that's something that I've been speaking regularly to, you know, to the more experienced players that play in my position, like Nev and Ollie, trying to pick up many tips as I can, and obviously speaking to the gaffer and Jimmy as well. Yeah, it's something that I'm trying to learn before I leave.
you mentioned car sharing with Max. Does he give you an easy time on the training ground, or is he still giving you a lot?
No, Max gives me a little bit, to be fair, in training. But I like it. I'd rather that than him being nice, because it just prepares me more for the game. But sometimes, yeah, you can catch him in a bad mood and it's not nice.
Sounds like you're getting exactly what you wanted out of a loan period, isn't it? You get engaged, you're not sharp,
Yeah, the most important thing for me is just learning. This 6 months is a massive learning experience for me, and I'm trying to soak up as much as I can.
Do you get much feedback from Chelsea, or is it just leave
to it? Yeah, we have a couple of loans managers that are regularly at games, and then we do clips, and sometimes I go back into Cobham to sit down with him and talk through games and my performances and stuff.
Okay, I guess, I mean, your ambition long term is, I suppose, to go and play for them.
Yeah, hopefully, yeah. Obviously, my main focus is here and now. Obviously, my long-term target would be hopefully to be with them in pre-season and push on.
Have you been in squads where players have pushed on, you know, some of your mates have
done? Yeah, we've had a few, like Amari Hutchinson last year went out on loan and obviously came back, and now he's playing regularly in the Premier League. And then, you know, there's loads of examples of players that have followed the loan system at Chelsea and been successful, like Levi Cole, who was playing in the first team now. Yeah. He went on loan 3 times. So I think, yeah, the loan system at Chelsea is great. And I'm getting as much out of it as I can.
And you'll be able to keep up to date with all of the action tomorrow. At Kent Online, we'll have details of the result in bulletins over on our sister radio station, KMFM, on Sunday morning. Plus, we'll have full reaction in Monday's podcast. On to cricket, and Kent's Zach Crawley says he's looking forward to an exciting season with the club this year. He'll be splitting his time between the county side and England. Kent will also be working under new head coach Adam Holyoake with their first county championship match against Northamptonshire starting on the 4th of April. On to rugby now, and Kent Spennell and Alex Mitchell are in the England side for their final Six Nations game this weekend. They've travelled to take on Wales and are still in with a chance of winning the tournament. Kick-off tomorrow is at 4:45. It's the final game of the season for Kent's Invicta Dynamos this weekend. They welcome Swindon Wildcats to the ice rink in Gillingham tomorrow before travelling to take on Oxford City Stars on Sunday. That's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on socials. You can also get the details of the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up to that, just head to kentonline.co.uk. And whilst you're on the site, you can sign up to Kent Online Premium. Now, that gives you access to content with fewer ads and exclusive stories. And if you use the promo code Nicola Everett, all one word, at the checkout, you get £30 off the price of an annual subscription. Whilst you're on the site today, don't forget to check out the latest review from our secret drinker, plus a guide to everything going on in Kent on the What's On pages. Hope you have a fantastic weekend. We'll be back with the podcast on Monday.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.